ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Spring is here, and so is another jam-packed episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Joining us this week is Daily Maverick political journalist, Queenen Maswabi. Here's what's coming your way. An SOE shakeup is welcomed by most. So, is it a move in the right direction? Then, from podcasts to politics, what Roman Kabanak's controversial appointment says about the DA.
Even when you look at the DA ministers who have been selected to represent them in the GNU, you look at Dean McPherson and the likes of Leon Schreiber. We also look at Jane Sithole. She's the leader of the DA in Mpumalanga. These are all John's friends.
Later, do we have a compromised Minister of Justice? And bringing the Gies to the Paralympics in Paris. But first, as we celebrate day 160 of no load shedding, it seems as though South Africa has reached a crucial turning point in our 17-year-long energy crisis. Pessimists will say don't hold your breath, while optimists, such as ourselves, are eagerly awaiting a blackout-free summer.
Welcome back to The Whole Week Wrap, Queenen. How have you been?
I've been good. I'm happy that the weather is getting better, especially in Johannesburg. So I'm looking forward to spring and to ending off the year on a bang.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So load shedding. Let's start our chat with load shedding. Last week, Eskom CEO Dan Marukane stopped short of really declaring an end to load shedding. Instead, he said that they anticipate a load shedding free summer and that the power utility expects the dreaded blackouts to be a thing of the past by March 2025, which is something they've said a couple of times before as well. Now, his announcement comes after South Africa experienced nearly 160 days of no load shedding, which has been absolute heaven. So do you think this is the beginning of the end of load shedding?
I think it could possibly be the beginning of the end, Lazan, because initially I did think that the ANC government at the time, before this new administration came into power, that they were burning diesel. I think everyone's assumption was that they're doing that, obviously as a means to campaign for the elections and to make sure that South Africans go out and vote for the ANC. But I'm starting to see that they might have a long-term plan that is actually starting to work out. Ever since the president decided to appoint a minister of electricity last year, there's been a sharp focus on load shedding. So it does seem as if there is a plan in motion, and that's why we are seeing these changes. However, there has been a lot of criticism about these power cuts we're getting. They're calling it load reduction instead of load shedding. And some people are saying, no, it's the same as load shedding. But the Minister of Electricity has maintained that it is not the same as load shedding and that it shouldn't be regarded as such.
Yes, because I was just about to mention the load reduction as well. It's a practice whereby Eskom cuts power to areas with high numbers of illegal connections, really. And it is a fair process if you think about it just purely about what it means on paper. But in the process, many law-abiding residents with legit connections are left to suffer for several hours without power because of this. So do you think this is perhaps where Eskom needs to maybe shift its focus next to address these illegal connections? Because they are overloading the substations and the systems that are in place. So maybe this is where their next focus should be.
For sure, I do think that that could be one of the focuses for Eskom moving forward, just ensuring that no one is, especially unexpectedly, left in the dark. Because, you know, with load shedding, at least we would get notifications. We would know that there's no electricity for certain periods of time. But with load reduction, it just pounces on you. And it's happened to me too, unfortunately. And sometimes it's for days on end. I mean, I work from home, so it's really unbearable for me to have to be in a situation where I don't have electricity and I haven't been informed beforehand.
It's a move long in the making. A plan to unbundle South Africa's floundering state-owned enterprises from the now-dissolved Department of Public Enterprises. Instead, each SOE will now be aligned with its respective department. Largely welcomed by political parties and analysts, could this be what saves state capture-hit entities such as Eskom, Transnet and Denel?
Speaking of SOEs, on Monday, President Cyril Ramaphosa announced that the various state-owned enterprises will now finally be moved to their respective ministries. This has, of course, been on the table for quite some time. Now, as the Department of Public Enterprises, which has been home to all SOEs over the years, was dissolved in July. Now, this means that, for example, Eskom will now fall under the Department of Energy. We'll see Transnet and SAA falling within the Department of Transport. And overall, this is a move that's been celebrated by many. But why has it taken this long for government to make this very logical move? Because to me, this seems like this is something that should have been done ages ago.
I think there's a lot when it comes to this dynamic around the unbundling of SOEs. There were issues, obviously, just internally within the ANC around dissolving one of the ministries. We do know that the State Enterprises Ministry was led by Pravin Gordhan in the previous administration. And now in this new administration, finally, a decision was made and the various SOEs were moved to relevant portfolios. While it's good news, there's been a lot of criticism around the shortcomings of it. And one of them is potentially seeing the president having a lot of power over SOEs. There's been a backlash around that. And then also it's a lack of clarity around the laws which will then govern the SOEs when they are under government departments.
Now, the next step, obviously, in this is to also finalize the National State Enterprise Bill that will hopefully enable the development of a national strategy for SOEs. And that essentially means that, in short, it's a way to ensure all SOEs abide by the same rules and processes. Because I think it's been quite all over the place. Yes. You know, Eskom kind of manages things the way it wants to manage it. Transnet manages things the way it feels is best.
My issue always is that, will this have any significant change? Will this mean that our SOEs will be better managed moving forward? Or is this just like another tactic by government to pretend as if they're doing something to ensure that our SOEs are running properly? It's possible that it could be positive for our SOEs. I think there's nothing wrong with uniformity. As you said, they will all be managed in one way. I think it would be a better way of managing them, because then government can keep track of exactly what's happening quite easily compared to before. But I think we need to wait and see, because when it comes to implementation, we know that our government takes ages. And as you said in the beginning, this was the case with just unbundling these SOEs and moving them to different departments. We're going to have to be patient yet again as South Africans, but I do hope that it will come with a lot of change.
He's been called a racist, climate change denialist, an ableist and a Nazi sympathizer. It goes without saying, Roman Kabinak's recent appointment by DA leader John Steenhuisen has ruffled some feathers. Why this surprising move gives us a glimpse into what's really happening within the DA.
Let's move on to the DA. And the DA has done it again. It's made the country very angry by appointing yet another controversial figure, this time in the form of Roman Kabinak. Now, DA leader John Steenhuisen, who's also the Minister of Agriculture, announced the appointment of Kabinak as his chief of staff. And this despite Kabinak having made some really questionable and seemingly racist remarks on his podcast in recent years. So How has the DA gotten it this wrong again? Because we've seen this with Ronaldo Gous, and now it's Roman. And I just don't understand what the thinking is here.
I mean, a lot of people are saying that the DA is doing exactly what the ANC does with its cadre deployment system, and that the DA was fighting against the ANC. But I've always said it's easy to speak from the outside. Once you do have power and you are in that position to make decisions, that's when you are truly tested, right? It's very difficult for most ministers and people in leadership to choose whoever they want to work with them fairly. I do think that they lean towards people that they know personally or people they believe they can trust, right? It's been said that John Steenhuisen has a close relationship with Roman Kabarnik, and Roman Kabarnik has time and again bragged about this on his podcast, about his close friendship with John, and that they are buddies, right? And I don't want to bring this up, but even when you look at the DA ministers who have been selected to represent them in the GNU, you look at Dean McPherson and the likes of Leon Schreiber. We also look at Jane Sithole. She's the leader of the DA in Mpumalanga. These are all John's friends. And I heard about the turmoil within the DA around these appointments, and that there was a bit of unhappiness from insiders because they are aware that people who've been appointed are closely linked to John. Again, I'm not saying that the ministers don't deserve the position, but we are very aware of the kind of friendship he has with those who have been given ministerial and deputy minister posts. But going back to this matter, I think that Roman Kabarnik is a very controversial figure, and that is also maybe the crux of the matter. Not only their friendship, but just what he has said on social media and also on his podcast, which has raised eyebrows time and again, and people believing that he's not adequately qualified even for the position. And I mean, we can debate this for a very long time about what it actually takes to be a chief of staff or if there are any educational requirements to do the job. When it comes to government, it really gets complicated because I think most of the time there aren't really set courses for positions like that.
For me as well, the response from the DA was quite laughable because on Thursday there was a briefing where DA spokespersons Karabo Kakao and Willie Okump said, quote, "What Minister Steenhuisen's decision is in appointing his chief of staff is his decision," unquote. And basically they're saying this has absolutely nothing to do with the DA. They went on the whole thing of there's a separation between party and state within the Democratic Alliance. But how can they say this when Steenhuisen is the party leader? It's just a bit bizarre for me.
I think it's also very convenient for them to say this because they've been constantly criticizing the ANC and they forget to separate state from party when it comes to the ANC. But conveniently now, they understand that there is a separation of some sort. So I also was very concerned about the DA's response in regards to this. And I believe that this has always been the issue with John Steenhuisen and the DA, how they dismiss the media when there are valid complaints and concerns around anything that they might be doing wrong. The DA has a way of pushing the media to the side and saying, well, we are still doing the right thing. They barely ever concede. Whereas I believe that the ANC, obviously being the former governing party, they have been the party that's been most in the spotlight for corrupt leaders and the likes. And they've had to take action almost immediately or face so much onslaught from the media and public. I feel like this is not practiced when it comes to the DA, and they've gotten away with this for a very long time. I do believe that if it was any other party, the DA would be issuing statements back to back, trying to make sure that whoever's involved is removed from the position. In fact, they were going to go as far as saying the minister should be removed for making that decision. So I can't take the DA seriously when they operate like this as a political party.
It was a legitimate commercial loan, says newly appointed Justice Minister Thembi Semelane. The transaction was completely above board, she adds. A recent investigation by Daily Maverick and News 24 shows how Semelane allegedly received over R500,000 from VBS Mutual Bank, monies seemingly linked to a company implicated in corrupt transactions and multi-million rand kickbacks. So, what does this mean for the minister in charge of the various prosecuting bodies tasked with investigating the VBS heist?
Now, let's move on to some judicial news and let's focus on Justice Minister Thembi Semelane. She's been in office for just over a month, but already there's a really dark cloud hanging over her head. This after a joint investigation by Daily Maverick and News 24 revealed how Semelane allegedly received over 500,000 rands from VBS-linked company Gundo Wealth Solutions while she served as Polokwane mayor in 2016. Tell us a little bit more about this in-depth investigation, what it revealed. It made for quite shocking reading.
Extremely shocking, because we thought that we, as the media and as the public, we know the gist of what happened with VBS, and it seems like more and more information is being uncovered by journalists, right? The story revolves around her during her tenure as the mayor of Polokwane municipality. And I think that's very important because, I mean, as the mayor, you are in local government. You are the first reference of any political party to the masses. That's how important I believe local government is when it comes to government generally and government structures. But the issue here is that she received money from one of the VBS accused. And it's very shocking because throughout everything that's happened, I think we have been hearing a number of names. We've heard the names of Floyd Shivambu in the ANC, Florence Radzilani, and Danim Caesar. And she knows this is an ongoing case. I asked myself why she did not come forward, why she allowed the media to expose her ties when it comes to someone linked to VBS and accused in the VBS matter. That's really my key question, because if it is that this was an innocent loan, she says that the 500,000 that she received was money she used to open a coffee shop in Sandton and that she paid off the loan. However, since she said that, there's been no evidence to show that she paid back the loan. And this is something quite simple, because if you have paid anything off, there should be some kind of certificate, anything to show that you've paid off the debt, an email, a message. I mean, she's unable to produce this, and she's expecting us to believe that this money was paid back.
And we know that she's avoided answering any questions regarding the payment in question. And she's now been called in by President Cyril Ramaphosa to kind of explain what happened. So what does this mean for Semelane? Do you see her surviving this?
You know, the issue here with VBS is that initially, there was Florence Razilani and Danim Caesar. They are both from Limpopo, very prominent leaders of the ANC there. When the news broke, they were initially suspended from the ANC. They kind of stepped aside from their positions at the time, and it was said that they're going to allow the matter to play out. Now, the ANC then implemented its step-aside guidelines, and those guidelines were saying that if you are not charged, then you're not required to step aside from your position, which means if it's allegations, then it's not relevant. So from what I can tell, if the ANC continues with the same precedents, they won't be able to remove her or expect her to step aside based on allegations.
But my question is that can you really expect an implicated person to adequately lead the National Prosecuting Authority and the Investigating Directorate, which are essentially the same entities that could potentially charge her criminally for this VBS loan? So wouldn't it be wise to ask her to just step aside until there's some more clarity on this?
Yeah, I think it's very complicated when it comes to that. But then it's something that probably the ANC needs to talk about internally, because if she has to step down from her position, she'll probably want everyone else who's been mentioned to also relinquish all their powers and to wait until there's more information about what really happened with VBS. It's going to be a tough one for the ANC, because if she does step aside, I think for the public, it will mean a lot. And I think people will highlight the fact that it was the same thing that happened to Zweli Mkhize when it came to Digital Vibes. He was not formally charged, but as soon as allegations were made public and there was a story about it, he did step aside. He stepped aside because it was a crucial time for any country. It was a COVID-19 pandemic and the worst time for any minister to be accused of stealing public funds at the time. So it's very tricky, as you said, because of the portfolio that she holds. It might mean that she needs to step aside, but it would mean that there would be a lot of internal debate in the ANC around how to now deal with this matter and what it would mean for anyone else who's implicated.
The Paralympics Games in Paris are in full swing. And once again, South Africa's top Paralympians are giving it their all. From tennis to track and field to swimming and everything in between, we are fully behind Team SA.
Just as we're coming off from our Paris Olympics high, the Paralympics kicked off in Paris on Thursday. Once again, we have some amazing athletes representing South Africa. I'm going to be keeping an eye on the swimming and athletics divisions, because those are the two categories where we've managed to clinch a good number of medals in the past. So I'm very excited to see what comes from that. But I'm also very excited to see what Mpumelelo Mhlongo does in the long jump. And then there's also Kotatso Monchane, someone we featured on Carte Blanche just a couple of weeks ago, doing her thing at the wheelchair tennis women's doubles. So really, there's so much coming our way, and I'm very, very excited. And I really hope South Africa maintains the energy that we had with the Paris Olympics, just in terms of supporting our athletes.
I'm also hoping everyone is as excited with the Paralympics. I don't see a lot of people, though, you know, speaking about it or tweeting on X or on other social media platforms. But I do think as we gain momentum, that's when people start watching. Even with the Olympics, I think there were a lot of people who maybe weren't interested at first. But as things started unfolding and we started winning medals, a lot of South Africans started supporting our athletes. I'm looking forward to seeing Kotatso, because she's been doing amazing when it comes to tennis, and I really hope that she's able to clinch a medal. I'm also looking forward to seeing, as you said, Mpumelelo Mhlongo. We have Simone Kruger who does discus. We also have Yaku Smit, who's going to do the 100 meters race. And it's going to be exciting, and I hope we get more medals. I think with the Olympics, I mean, South Africa tried. I think we were second highest medals in Africa. And that was really a good feat. We managed to get gold medals, which is very important. And we also got a medal for track, which is always exciting, because I think, no offense to anyone, I always say when the track starts, that's when the Olympics start. So it's really good to see our runners doing well and our athletes doing well. So I'm looking forward to seeing what our Paralympians can do, and I'm wishing them all the best of luck.
Absolutely. Now, the Paralympics come to a close on Sunday, the 8th of September. So really, let's continue supporting our athletes throughout the week. Let's keep that energy up, because we have some really, really amazing athletes taking part. Queenan, this has been a really great chat. Thanks so much for taking the time to sit down for another weekly news wrap. And yeah, I hope you have a wonderful week.
It's always a pleasure, Liz.
Great. Have a fabulous one. Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.